All right. The only thing we're going to do that's different, and I did GLM first this time just because these expected marginal means advantages are not to be understated. So just wanted to show you that one first. We're going to go build ourselves a variable that is the mean-centered squared. When we do the Uninova, when we do the GLM, we're going to put in the original unit-coded variable, the centered number of sessions, and the centered and squared number of sessions. When we build the design for the model, I told you we were going to use this group variable. I told you we were going to use this quantitative variable. I told you we were going to use this quantitative variable too. Now I'm telling you, build me an interaction term between the unit-coded and the centered quantitative variable, and build me another interaction term between the unit-coded and the squared. Again, the interaction terms in the GLM are there because you build them in the design statement. And we're going to ask for group comparisons at 2, 5, and 9. Now, we're going to get them at whatever it was, 5.6 or 5.4 or something. But I really want them at 5, not 5.6, because nobody's going to come to 5.6 sessions. And that's where the mathematicians and the data analysts sometimes split between descriptive values and representative values. So there's a lot going on in this model. We do not have a group difference overall. That means if you take the overall average for the two groups and control for everything else, you don't get a grouping effect. That doesn't mean there's never a difference between starters and bench. That means there isn't overall. Notice that you get a different significance test. You get the same thing here, because of the way it's coded. We have a main effect for linear and a main effect for quadratic number of sessions. We have no linear interaction, but we have a quadratic interaction. Down here, we have no group difference, but now we know it's telling us only about the average amount of sessions. Here we have a linear and a quadratic term, no linear interaction, and a quadratic interaction. Before we really trust that null, we want to take a look at the plot. Push this up a little bit. And I'll be honest, I chose this set of data to show you a dramatic advantage of a quadratic effect being stuck in a model. I'll admit it. They're out there. It's not that hard to find them. But you would definitely interpret this differently than that. The grabbing the average slope instead of the differential slope allows us to miss a lot. We're missing how much these performed sucky originally. We're missing the fact that the people who bought these data or bought this study found was the most important thing, which is that those benchers swing back up. That was awful. It's okay if they don't just continue to get better at the same rate. But to disenfranchise, disenchant, crush their spirits, whatever version you want to use, to the point that tactical errors actually increase from additional instruction and practice, that's just untenable. What this means is that the negative effects of repeated labeling are stronger than the positive effects of repeated training. Even though they were both getting trained. And the training sessions were beautifully done and orchestrated so that the benchers did not have less contact, coach contact, reps, or anything else than the starters. In fact, for the most part, the people who were doing the training in the sessions didn't know who had been identified as what, although over time it's impossible to not hear the grumblings. And, you know, it's not like they were in B and S shirts or have it tattooed in a scarlet letter on their forehead or anything. So they worked really hard at this. But that curve back up is what really did the deed and created policy, that what the kids are told from day one is every game we will re-decide who's starting, constantly holding out the hope that you're a starter. Because when you don't, things go to shit. Plus, pure advertising. You send these kids back, they're not a whole lot better than they started out. Their coach isn't going to send next year's kids to your very expensive camp. There's all kinds of information in this. I love applied science. Let's go. So this just walks through and again shows you where we have group differences and where we don't. So at two sessions, we've got a marginally significant difference that with a sample size of 31, I would probably treat that. I mean, that's 1.5 errors. At the wrong time, that's a game. It gets bigger. Now here at 5, we've got almost none. And that's why we had that main effect that was a null. And then here we've got that big difference again of almost 4 tactical errors. And the rest of this is just walking you through all the same stuff. Oh, I'm sorry. This is still a GLM. Here what we did is we rewrote the dummy code so that we could get that regression weight. If we asked for all the same expected marginal means, they would come out exactly the same as these, only which of these was labeled as which would flip, and the sign of the mean differences would flip. Same two groups. Yes?
Ken, when we see that quadratic diagram and we see the tactical error swing back up, how do we know that it is really a problem and not just because we built a curve and a curve will necessarily...
Oh. If you throw the cubic term in, it nulls. This sucker really does come back up.
Okay.
In fact, when you put the cubic term in, it comes up a little bit faster. The second inflection point is here, and it's in the same direction.
So whenever we do, technically, whenever we do get a quadratic effect, we check always for a cubic.
It's not a bad idea. But especially when you get something that doesn't make sense. You know, for example, if this had come down below 0, then it would be nice to see if the quadratic squares it up, but it doesn't. It just doesn't get down to 0. Same thing here. This could be just necessary because of the curve, but it might not be. And in this case, it wasn't. I didn't put it into this handout. I just made this a standard quadratic handout. And I'm going to try and get away with warning you that when you get a quadratic that you're worried about, what you're worried about is if there's an inflection point you're missing. And that means you need that 2 inflection point cubic term. No. Good. Yeah.
Number of sessions, right?
Yes.
And the way the model works is it looks how it behaves for each of the groups.
Separately, yes.
Separately, right?
Because we put that quadratic interaction term in, it allows the curve of the two lines to be different. because we put the linear interaction term, it allows the slope of the two groups to be different.
Oh,
if we don't put those in, then we're doing homogeneity of regression slope, both linear and quadratic. And therefore, we would have to have parallel lines. And the lines would be parallel at this difference.
Is it too much cheating to graph the behavior of each group?
Hell no. Graphing data is never cheating. You're not likely to get much. I mean, this, if, when you plot this, even though we've got some very nice effects, and I've lost my little marking guy. I really have. Oh, there it is. Even though we have some very nice effects, when you plot this thing, it looks like this. Okay, you're unlikely to see a compelling shape or a compelling shape difference unless you're nailing 95% of the variance. It can be a wonderful wake-up call to plot those data and see, you know, well, when I'm here, let's take a look at that. Your wake-up call value, or your wake-up value when you look at a regression weight. Oh, I didn't plot it. Darn it. Okay, hold on a second. Let me pull my head out of my butt here and go grab this. See that number right there? Standard error of estimate? That's the standard deviation of the residuals. Or by, on average, averaging across everything, how much are you wrong on average? And it's 1.5. Where some of our big effects were only 4.5. And so that lets you know that around these very nice lines is a whole lot of cloud. And so I think it's a great idea, but I would not count on that initial inspection as giving me entree to doing the quadratics. You're going to do those quadratics because you decided to. Either because of the research history in this particular area, or in this case, just because practice has a habit of throwing you a quadratic. There was no, in the practice session stuff, there was nothing to even suggest an interaction. But when you look at the history of the variable, not the research tradition, quadratics show up all the time in practice effects.
But maybe I missed this. Is there a way to compare to the two models and see where we had more variance?
You can if you want to. Sure. From each model, well, in this case, I only ran the full model. In the GLM, I only ran the full model. I did not run any of the reduced models that are possible. And there's two obvious choices for a reduced model. One is the linear, the quadratic, and the group effect, leaving out both interactions. The other is the linear, the group effect, and the linear interaction, leaving out both quadratics. And you can get a nice argument going about which of those is simpler, good old parsimony. Okay? So, yeah, you can compare any two models you want that are properly nested models the same way you did in any other multiple regression. The R-squared change F test works every time. SAS will give it to you anywhere you want it. SPSS will give it to you within regression. It doesn't do it in GLM. Does that help? And so here again is that gathering up of information about the interaction, describing the interaction each way, the number of sessions in the motivational. And here's what the multiple regression code would look like. If I want the bench as the comparison, I set bench to 0. I compute my mean centered and my mean centered squared number of sessions, and I have to build myself a linear and a quadratic interaction term. If I'm working at 5 sessions, I'm going to use the same dummy code. I'm going to recenter and resquare, And when I recenter and resquare, I have to compute new interaction terms. Same thing at 9 sessions. If I want to flip things and I want to get the value for the starters, then I've got to flip what's 1, and that should be a 0, sorry. I flip who's 1 and who's 0, and again, I have to recompute those interaction terms. Anytime you mess with anything, you got to go get a new interaction term. Anytime you mess with a quantitative variable, you got to go get a new quadratic term. I suggest that you keep those together, you label the hell out of them, and you hope for the best, because that's where most of the mistakes get made.